Join me, if you would, in 1 Kings chapter number 7, where we're going to talk about the building of Solomon's palace complex. And we know that Solomon started building the temple complex in the fourth year of his reign, which would be immediately after David had passed away. They had overlapping reigns of about 3 years. And that took him about 7 years in order to finish the temple complex. Well, 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 1 says that Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished his entire house. In a couple of other passages, both in the Kings and in the Chronicles, it relates that he spent a total of 20 years constructing the palace of God, which would be the temple, and his own palace, which would be this 13-year period that we see here. So the 7 years for the temple, 13 years for his own palace, that matches 20 years total. And since that all started in the fourth year of his reign, we can be pretty certain that he was finished with all of these construction projects by the 24th year of his reign, which would also happen to be the 499th year of the Exodus. So a significant time period for the Israeli people. From our calendar standard, I believe this is right around 958 BC. So we're talking about the 10th century. Let's talk about the description we have for the palace complex. Now, before I do that from the scripture, let's talk about where this complex would have been located. We know that the temple was located roughly around where the Golden Dome of the Rock is located in Jerusalem today. That's all on what we call the Temple Mount. Now, it's a little bit deceptive for our purposes here in 1 Kings to think about the Temple Mount, because the Temple Mount did not actually exist back at that time. The Temple Mount that we know is basically a retaining wall that was built by King Herod in the first century BC, the last part of the first century BC. And we can see the western retaining wall. That's where the Jewish people gather for prayer still to this day. We can see the southwest corner of that wall. The whole southern wall is still clearly seen from Herod's period. And the eastern wall is also very clearly seen, although it has some newer construction up on top of it, including that great eastern gate that everybody points to, but is not related to biblical things at all, because it was built many, many centuries after Jesus came and went. So that outline that I just described, we call that the Temple Mount, but it's the Temple Mount of Herod. In the time of Solomon, there was the top up there where the Golden Dome is now located. The shrine building would have been there. Then there would have been a leveled area immediately around it, surrounded by a wall, a very big, pretty wall. The east side would have had a colonnaded portico for the gathering of the worshipers. But that's pretty much the only thing that would have been up on the very top of that Temple Mount area. To the south of there, there would have been a gradual sloping down to what is now referred to as the Old City of David. When you're looking at the Temple Mount, there are some archaeological digs immediately south of it. There's some steps and things that are pretty ancient. But there's an archaeological digs. Then there's the main roadway that goes around the Temple Mount. And then immediately south of that is this archaeological park called the City of David. And it's an oval shape, and that's where the ancient city of Salem, which then became the ancient city of Jebus, which then became the ancient city of Jerusalem, the city of David, is located. And the northern end of that oval has got a great big stone structure in it that seems to have been the palace of David. And so the region from that archaeological dig of the great stone structure northward along the slope, even past where the current southern wall of the Temple Mount is, that whole sloped area is where Solomon would have built his palace and governing complex. And that's what we're talking about here. The reason we don't know exactly where that is because when God's judgment fell upon Jerusalem at the hands of the Babylonians, all of those places were totally wiped out, taken right down to the foundations, and the foundations may have even been dug up as well. So unless the archaeological teams get down deeper past where they're at right now, they're probably not going to find the ruins of this complex that we're talking about, not even the footprint. We have to just use our imagination to think how marvelous they might have been. All right, so with all that in mind, think about the Golden Dome being the target where the temple that we described several sessions back. That's where the temple was standing, up on the top of the Temple Mount. And now let's describe the buildings that would be downslope from there toward the south, partway between the temple, the brand new temple complex, and the ancient city of Jerusalem with the complex of David's palace in the northern part of that. Verse number 2, he built the house of the forest of Lebanon. Now, this is going to be the dining and gathering complex of his palace. Solomon would have had lots and lots of visitors coming in all the time, and they would have gathered together for big meals on a regular basis. And so the House of the Forest of Lebanon seems to be the place where that happened. We'll see why it got its name in just a bit here. Its length was 100 cubits. Now, remember that I keep using the long cubit because that seems to have been indicated in one of the passages from Chronicles. That long cubit is 20.7 inches. So 100 cubits would be 172 and a half feet. And I think it would probably have been oriented east and west. And it may represent the exact same dimension of the court that would have been around the temple complex higher up on the hill. So there might be some mirroring going on here, some symmetry. Its breadth was 50 cubits, so that's half the length, and so that's 86.25 feet, and perhaps it was also representative of how wide the temple court was, but we don't know that for sure. And its height, 30 cubits, and we know that's definitely how high the interior height of the shrine building itself was. Now, the shrine building had a great big giant tower at the front of it, but the building itself was 30 cubits tall. So that's how tall the House of the Forest of Lebanon is, and that's 51.75 feet. And it was built on four rows of cedar pillars with cedar beams on the pillars. It was covered with cedar above the chambers that were on the 45 pillars, 15 in each row. And so this is where it gets its name. Instead of having stone columns holding up a cedar roof, Solomon has imported full-sized cedar tree trunks from up in Lebanon. And those full-sized trunks of trees are placed in four rows, 15 pillars in each row, so you got a total of 45. And it's three rows in the Septuagint, so that's why it's the 45. And so what happens is you end up with sitting inside this dining facility, this gathering facility. It's like you're inside the forest of Lebanon with tree trunks all around you, probably about every 12 cubits, there's a tree trunk within your grasp. And so that's why it's called the forest of the cedars of Lebanon. And it would have smelled magnificent as well and quite impressive. And then above, of course, it's roofed over the top with the same sort of scented wood and probably magnificent carvings everywhere. Verse 4 says, there were window frames in three rows and windows opposite window in three tiers. All the doorways and the windows had square frames, and window was opposite window in three tiers. So if you think about the aisles that are made by these columns, and both east and west and north and south, those aisles, there's probably windows that are allowing light to come in along the line of all of those aisles. And it's not just simply one window, it's three windows, you know, one up really high, one medium level, and one down lower. And so this is a very light and airy environment. There's light coming in from everywhere. And there would be, verse continues on in verse 5, all the doorways and windows had square frames, and the windows were opposite windows in three tiers. Probably they would have had some sort of system of lattice work over them to keep the birds out, but to allow the light and air free access into this area. Would have been a magnificent place to have a state dinner. It doesn't tell it here. It'll say later that Solomon had all sorts of gold shields that were used in ceremonial parades that were affixed on these walls as well, probably in between or nearby all of these windows. Very impressive place to have a dinner. Verse number 6. Let's move on to another building. He made the Hall of Pillars. Its length was 50 cubits. And so there we've got that. Let's see. That's somewhere here. I lost my note. That's 86.25 feet. And its breadth was 30 cubits. And so that would be 51 3/4 feet. And there was a porch in front of the pillars and a canopy in front of them. Now, nobody knows for sure where this was located, but I would suggest to you this might be a connecting area between the temple complex to the north and the palace complex to the south. Because we've also got the throne room and the residence area that are all going to be somehow connected together here in this complex. Verse number 7, he made the hall of the throne where he was to pronounce judgment, even the hall of judgment. It was finished with cedar from floor to rafters. So just as well appointed as the temple itself. All these carvings, all this fine-grained scented wood from floor to ceiling. Didn't say anything here about the floors, but they're probably a special wood. Ceiling is definitely a very special wood ceiling. And probably no stone is showing, just like in the temple. No stone showing, but the stones have the main footprint of the building, and all the other stuff is showing off the beauty of wood, and maybe even some overlay with gold and silver and precious stones, just like happened in the temple. So those are the places for the administration to use. The gathering area of the hall of the forest of Lebanon, and then the throne room. Then we need the residence area. Verse number 8, his own house where he was to dwell in the other court back of the hall was of like workmanship. Solomon also made a house like this hall for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken in marriage. So it's not just the public buildings, the administrative buildings. We've got the private residence areas, because Solomon's got lots of full wives and concubines of secondary rights and privileges, and they all have to have their own special places to live. It is possible that there was some sort of apartment-like complex where most of these women lived, where they would have very spacious and well-appointed complex, very, very well-appointed apartments to live in, but they wouldn't have an entire palace to themselves, except this one woman, Pharaoh's daughter, whom he apparently married while David was still alive, and she has been living somewhere in the ancient city of Jerusalem, but not in David's palace, because that's where the Ark of the Covenant was, until the temple was completed, and Solomon did not feel it would be appropriate for a non-Israeli, someone who probably was following a different faith even, to be living in the same building where the Ark of the Covenant was housed. So he had been working on her own palace, and that gets finished right around this same time. Verse number 9, all these were made of costly stones cut according to measure, sawed with saws back and front, even from the foundation to the coping, from the outside to the great court. The foundation was of costly stones, huge stones, stones of 8 and 10 cubits. So apparently just the normal range of size is from about almost 14 feet up to about just a little over 17 feet. So those are pretty big stones. And that's the framework. And then on the inside is all the paneling. Verse 11, above were costly stones cut according to measurement, and then cedar. So that's the topping. Then he talks about the great court. Verse 12, the great court had 3 courses of cut stone around it and a course of cedar beams. So had the inner court of the house of he who is and the vestibule of the house. David walled in his complex for the palace, just like he'd walled in the temple complex. And the way he did it was he had 3 levels of large cut stones. And then on top of that, some sort of decorative cap made of cedar. And so you just got to use your imagination as to how amazing this would have been. Between the temple and the palace complex, I've said many a time, if this stuff had not been destroyed by the Babylonians at God's judgment in 587 BC, it would have made the list of the wonders of the ancient world, because there's just nothing like it that had ever been built. Starting at verse 13 is a whole bunch of things that we've already talked about, so we're going to jump a couple of chapters ahead to material we haven't got to yet. Chapter number 9 of 1 Kings, down to verse number 10. At the end of 20 years in which Solomon had built the 2 houses, the house of he who is and the king's house, that's the timing I gave you a little while ago. So we're talking about the 24th year of his reign, which would be 958 BC. Hiram, king of Tyre, had supplied Solomon with cedar and cypress timber and gold and as much as he desired. King Solomon gave to Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. So Solomon has been paying for the professional labor of people from the Sidonians, from the Phoenicians of Tyre and Sidon. And at the end of the construction period, 20 years, besides all the pay that's been given each year for these people, Solomon gives 20 cities, perhaps one city for each of the 20 years, to Hiram as a gift. These cities were Israeli to begin with, but since they are on the borderland with Tyre, with the Phoenician kingdom of Tyre, Solomon donates them as border cities to Hiram. However, verse 12, when Hiram came from Tyre to see the cities that Solomon had given him, they did not please him. Now, there's no explanation as to why that's the case. It's just that he didn't like them. Therefore, he said, "What kind of cities are these that you've given me, my brother?" So they are called the land of Kabul to this day. Kabul is the Hebrew way of saying not worth anything, which has caused me some difficulty because I grew up in southern Missouri, and the name of my hometown, the name of my the town of my birth was Kabul, C-A-B-O-O-L. So it is pronounced exactly like this. And certainly my hometown, my nativity town, is not worth nothing. It's special. And the people that live there would certainly object to being called the place that that is worthless. Now, that's not the reason why it got its name. There's a local legend that supposedly there was a chief Kabul, but the real story seems to be that there was a railroad worker that helped get this little town started on the rail line. And he had spent some time in Afghanistan and had been to the old city of Kabul, K-A-B-U-L, and suggested that is the name, and it kind of stuck. All right, so anyway, Hiram is not happy and gripes about these cities, and they end up staying in Solomon's possession. Now, verse 14 seems a little weird and out of place at this particular juncture, but it says that Hiram had sent to the king 120 talents of gold. So that's over a long period of time that he'd been giving Solomon gold to be used in the process of the building of the temple. Now, verse 15, this is the account of the forced labor that King Solomon drafted to build the house of He Who Is, and his own house, and the Milo, and the wall of Jerusalem, and Hazor, and Megiddo, and Gezer. So we start seeing a whole bunch of other projects that Solomon has been involved in, and how he drafted foreigners, non-Israelis, into this heavy labor that goes over this long period of time. And this is kind of the beginnings of the Solomon at the end of his 40 years, when he's become a tyrant. He's become a mean person, unfeeling, and only interested in doing things that bring him fame and money. But anyway, at this time, though, he's rebuilding everything he gets his hands on. And that includes Hazor, which was captured by him and turned into a key city of his. I've been to Hazor and seen a lot of the stones that were put in place with his rebuild. Same thing for Megiddo. You can find some of the Solomonic construction still there in the ruins. Gezer, We've got an additional note, verse 16. Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and captured Gezer and burned it with fire and had killed the Canaanites who lived in the city and had given it as a dowry to his daughter Solomon's wife. So there were a few places like Gezer that remained Canaanite right up until the time of David and Solomon. And in this case, the Pharaoh of this period went in and took the city over and gave the ruins of it, because cities that are involved in warfare often suffer. He gave the ruins of it to his daughter as a wedding present when she married young Solomon. And that happened probably while David was still alive, with the idea that Solomon then could turn around and rebuild it, and it would be her special city. And so verse 17 says, so Solomon rebuilt Gezer. And then we've got a list of other towns not very far from Gezer. Lower Beth Horon and Baalat, which is another name for Kiriath-Jearim, where the Ark of the Covenant was for a while. And Tamar in the wilderness in the land of Judah, which I believe Tamar is down in the Dead Sea Valley. And then all the store cities that Solomon had, and the cities for his chariots, and the cities for his horsemen, and whatever Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion, and all the peoples who were left of the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, who were not of the people of Israel, their descendants who were left after them in the land, whom the people of Israel weren't unable to devote to destruction, these Solomon drafted to be slaves, and so they are to this day, so the time when this person is writing. But of the people of Israel, Solomon made no slaves. They were the soldiers, and they were his officials, his commanders, his captains, his chariot commanders, and his horsemen. So we've moved into this description of Solomon's kingdom as it moves forward after the building of the temple and his palace, and soon he'll be getting a special visitor.